We've got CES week, so there's a lot going on this week, like news-wise. It's been kind of almost like Sunday and Monday was like loaded with just like almost Apple-level announcements, because it kind of was. So we've got all that to get to and more. I want to start out with an update. We mentioned at the end of last year that we were kind of still waiting for the Spectrum Live TV app to come out, and this is like part of WWDC in 2018 was that Apple announced a new tvOS feature for Apple TV called Zero Sign-On, where just based on your Wi-Fi, the Apple TV knows that you are a cable subscriber too, like you pay for cable TV. And the feature only works with Charter Spectrum, which is like only in certain markets within the U.S., so it's really limited. But the zero sign-on part didn't make it out the door until like the end of December, so like barely 2018. And then the other part of that announcement was the Spectrum Live TV app, and that came like early in January, so the last few days. And I'm not a Charter Spectrum customer because in the U.S., like these service providers are only in certain regions, and it's not in my region. There's like two options, and this isn't one of them. But where my mom lives, she is a Charter Spectrum customer. So I got to try this out, Mayo, on an Apple TV in real life. And the app works as advertised.
It's a good start.
Yeah, you install it and on the Apple TV, and then you launch the app, and you can watch on-demand content or live TV, and you get like this whole like, you know, digital menu that you can flip through just like on a cable box. So it kind of makes your Apple TV a cable box, which is like what they're going for. And they even do a thing like where the channels that you watch, it recognizes those as like your favorites. And then, so if you have it on the top shelf of TOS, or the first five apps on the top row, they have an extra area to show big tiles of content. And they do like squares for the channels. So if it's like a Cartoon Network, there'll be like a Cartoon Network square. Which I guess the only time I've seen the square is just like for music, for like album art, but they're yeah. taking rather than like 16x9 or like movie posters, so vertical, they do just a square for the channel, which I found to be kind of neat.
And do they show the logo of the channel, or are they showing like what's on?
Just the like logo of the channel. So they've got these like pre-drawn out, and so it looked clean. It wasn't like busy, like a scene of whatever you watched or a commercial even. It's like, it looked really nice. So I was generally impressed with it. The zero sign-on part was a little bit disappointing. I'm not like the idea of zero sign-on is like you get away from putting in an email and password to authenticate cable.
Which on Apple TV is particularly problematic because you have the serial motor, not keyboard, physical keyboard. So typing email addresses and passwords by zooming the little touchpad around is really annoying. Even if you do they let you do enter by voice, mm-hmm. but that still means going letter by letter, like B, E, N, J, and with the passwords, because the they have like the secure text entry field, so they turn into bullets as you keep typing.
Yeah,
you get it wrong like constantly. You just don't notice because if it transcribes one letter wrong and you're not paying attention, you're just out of luck. You have to do the whole thing all over again. So reducing that down is something they've been working at in many different ways, really, because for years, because they now do that thing where your phone will light up if you're logged into the same account as the TV, and it lets you use the keyboard on your phone to type in proactively to the TV instead. And obviously you have the remote app where you can type in the keyboard, and then on iOS 12 they even do automatic password sharing under certain conditions, where this is really clever actually, the Siri remote Bluetooth, if it detects your iPhone's Bluetooth in vicinity, it can use that to enter passwords for you.
Mm-hmm.
Not just, oh, it's on the same iCloud, so we'll use it, but they kind of do like a in-person human validation where if your device is physically near to the TV, we will expose the passwords from your device to the television.
Mm-hmm.
And the zero sign-on is obviously the ultimate idea of that, where you don't have to type in anything.
Yeah, it's just based on your Wi-Fi, and it's smart enough to know that you're clear to view the content. I mean, because there's no, like, if you plug in a cable box, there's no, like, process of, like, logging into each channel. You plug in and you're good. And what the channel apps have done on, like, every set-top box that I've used is throw up a Safari, a page that tells you a URL to go to, and then you're supposed to go on another device with a web browser to put in like this URL and this activation code, and then log in there with your account. You know, because the idea of like logging in on the TV is hard. And so, you, from what I saw, the Spectrum TV app worked with zero sign on, but the apps for like say ESPN, for example, it recognized that without any sign on. Spectrum service was present, and you could say yes, give permission to let this channel have access to that authentication. Like, okay, cool. But then you'd go to watch something that was behind the paywall, and it would still give you that same like go to this you know URL and authenticate there. And so it's not quite perfect yet. The app on its own is great for making the Apple TV a cable box for live TV, but I still think there's like a lot of work left to get to do to make it as easy as like what cable can be, plugging it up and just it works, you know.
Yeah, and a lot of this is laying foundations for future partnerships and expansion because mm-hmm. obviously they're not making this feature for it to only exist on Charter Spectrum, which I believe is a very small, slight like audience, right? In the US,
it's not the biggest, at least.
Yeah. Yeah. So obviously they want more cable networks to sign up with them. And I think what they want is cable networks to start letting their customers choose to receive Apple TVs rather than cable networks set-top boxes.
Yeah.
I believe that's where they're trying to go with it.
That's at least one strategy. Like, I don't know if it's like the strategy, but it's at least one strategy.
I think it's something that they wanted to do, and then they faced a lot of pushback because none of the cable manufacturers want to do it. So I presume that was one of the reasons the feature was developed, was to enable that to be more effortless, because mm-hmm. if you're struggling to sell or you're facing competition on selling set-top boxes, one way to do it better is to just force them on people by letting them get them instead of, you know, the cranky old boxes that they have. Yeah. Especially as they start to roll out, you know, their new TV service probably later in the year, I think they're going to try and let you buy that on your cable package.
Yeah, it's like you pay for it's like they won't position that as a cable replacement, because there were years of rumors of Apple developing like a live TV service, you know, like you've got YouTube has a thing, Hulu has a thing, PlayStation View is a thing. There's lots of these. Sling TV is a lot of these options. And, you know, there were even reports that were very specific about like the hang up is local channels, and Apple wants to have the local affiliates be present. And they just never got around all that. And so that would have been like, you don't pay, you know, Comcast for cable, you pay them for internet, but then like you don't pay them for the TV channels. You pay Apple for the over the top, you know, streaming stuff. And that all went away. And so now they can, you know, with the TV service for original content, you can say pay for internet, pay for cable even, and pay for our stuff for our original content. And there's not any overlap there.
And I think, say if you're with Verizon, I think they're going to want to part with Verizon to let you buy the Apple TV package as part of your Verizon bill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because the way that, and the equivalent to this is, on the iPhone, in certain countries, they let you pay for App Store purchases or, you know, top up your Apple ID credit through your mobile phone billing. So not having to use PayPal or a credit card, you can just use whatever the mobile phone plan is attached to mm-hmm. and top up there. So I think we'll see an attempt at partnerships to offer that as well. So, oh, you've got the cable box, and if you add on the Apple TV service when you're buying your package, oh, maybe they throw in an Apple TV as well, and then you get that, plus you get, because you're committing to a year of Apple TV service, or 2 years or 3 years, and that's will build through your Verizon package when you get your internet in the first place. I really think they're going to get this like front and center, and because the zero sign-on would identify the cable provider and string it together, because obviously when you set up your Apple TV, it's already going to know your Apple account, but it will need the association with the cable system to then unlock that for you. Mm-hmm. That's where I think they're going to go with this, is some pairing with cable networks to make it simpler. Because it's definitely not just, oh, we want to help Charter Spectrum make their TV app slightly better. Like, it's just not.
Yeah. When AT&T launched their DirecTV Now service, which is live TV over the internet through an app, they did a big promotion of the Apple TV because they, I guess they had a pretty good client on there. Well, it started out pretty rough and I guess it got better. But anyway, you could pay for 3 months of service for that service. And then it included it in Apple TV, which in some cases was a discount on the Apple TV or it was just free. It was a pretty good deal. It was like buy an Apple TV basically and you get 3 months of service for free, which is how they phrased it. But as long as there's not a live TV aspect of Apple's TV service, which there's no recent rumors of that being a thing, then there's no real overlap there and there's no real like fear. And it, like with, if you look at like the old model of like paying for a cable subscription, add-on channels, like premium add-on channels is totally a thing. You know, pay the cable provider extra so you have access to HBO or Showtime. And, kind of what you're describing is like that, where, you pay the provider more and then you get this channel. So that makes sense to me.
And then in reverse almost, zero sign-on might enable – so you haven't bought the Apple TV service from anybody, but so you set up your account, you go into the new TV app, and maybe it can associate your cable network with your device, and then inside the same TV app that's going to show the Apple original content, it will also expose whatever they partner with to let you play through the TV without you having to download separate apps and stuff, like put it all in one. Because there's been some rumors of like on the Apple TV, the new Apple TV service, you'll be able to get the Apple original content plus like pay for HBO, for instance.
Yeah.
And so maybe if the zero sign-on somehow backs up to, oh, you've paid for HBO already, they can just unlock that in the same apps you're often running. Like, there's definitely ambition for zero sign-on beyond what they've shown so far.
Yeah, a single regional carrier within the US, right? Yeah. That's what, with all this stuff, I mean, even with single sign-on, like, that's pretty ambitious. And it just took a long time for Apple to work out deals with the providers and the app, like the channels too. Like, so you've got to have a deal with the cable provider, which there are hundreds of, and then with each channel. And like that seems to be pretty well positioned now. But then with zero sign-on, it's like starting over again. And maybe that's what I saw was zero sign-on worked for the Charter TV app, the Spectrum TV app, but the apps like ESPN needed a software update to understand that handshake. And so it was still giving you the old go to the web and sign in thing. Although it should work with a single sign on. So it almost like it was a disadvantage. Like if they had a single sign on subscription, because I wonder if anyone has a different experience from what I had, which is Apple TV on the Wi-Fi. All the channels unlock because it's on the Wi-Fi through zero sign on. Like I don't know if people are having.
Well, if you zero signed on through Charter Spectrum app, right?
Yep.
And then you open the ESPN app, even if it's telling you to go to the web to enter a 4-digit code, it shouldn't have to tell you to enter account details because it's already zero signed on through the TV provider.
Yeah, but I mean, you do that on another device, though.
Where I think they're just out of sync is that that ESPN is like, oh, whatever, we'll just make people log in on another thing. Like, theoretically, obviously, it could all just work, but even better, for instance, what Plex does is you can log into the it just shows the 4-digit code and you go to the website, and I'm pretty sure you don't even have to log, and maybe you do. The vision is not.
It's not there yet.
And I can't even give much. Part of the problem we're talking about with the TV stuff is so much of it is US localized as well. Sure, it's like the international situation is even more dire.
Yeah.
we're still waiting for our. I mean, we only added like one of our main TV channels, Channel 4, even got an Apple TV app at the very, very end of December.
Yeah.
And obviously, there's no TV app integration of any kind whatsoever. So we're like 2 years behind.
Yeah. So I'm curious if anyone has Charter Spectrum cable and internet and Apple TV and had an experience where you log into Spectrum TV easily and then you also...
And hadn't already set up your integration.
Yeah, yeah.
So cool. If we're talking to you, we'll find you.
We'll find you. Also, I wanted to mention, before we get to all the news from this week, an experience I had on Christmas that I wanted to bring up last week and it just slipped my mind. But it was Christmas Day. You know, here's the scene. And my two kids are opening their presents each. And I've got a 4K video camera that I use sometimes. It's got really good optical zoom, like 30X or something. So I can be like in the back of the room and film like a musical as if I were like on stage. For that purpose, it's really good with a tripod. But I feel like the iPhone has things about video that are, you know, like the 60 frames per second and like stereo mics and stuff like that, that are just like, it's better in lots of situations to just film with that instead. So I thought about it. I was like, I'm going to use the iPhone for Christmas morning. Like, you know, half an hour of like opening presents shouldn't be a problem. And I've got a 512 gigabyte model of the iPhone XS Max. Like, I'm just going to go for it. And, you know, had plenty of battery. That wasn't an issue, the power. But I hit a storage limit. And the way that iOS handled it was really frustrating. So even though I had a 512 gigabyte iPhone, I also had like music loaded on it and my iCloud photo library all local, which, you know, ended up being the issue, is that like filming this 4K video, after 15 minutes, I got an alert that I was out of storage and the video stopped. It's like, oh, that's a bummer. But it was kind of a lull in the opening presents experience. But the recommendation was to turn on optimized storage for photos and video. So I did that. That's a slow process. Like, it wasn't an instant fix. So I go back to recording video and I got like 10 more minutes of video and and then it was just done. Like, I couldn't do it. I couldn't record another like 10 seconds of video before it would stop. So my like instant thing to do was go to settings and storage and manage that and like try and like do a big swipe and get rid of all the local music. And the system was just like going haywire and nothing was responsive. It was like, you know, when storage gets low, like things get slow. And it was just like, I couldn't say, here's 60 gigabytes of music, have that go away. And then like ride over that space. It couldn't do that. So what I ended up doing was realizing, oh, there's the iPad Pro with like the same class of camera quality. Let me just record the video on that. And that worked like a charm. But it was really frustrating. It's just like, you know, I the thing to do would have been to turn on manage storage, optimize storage ahead of time. But in the moment, like, that isn't something you want to have happen if it was like critical. And it ended up like getting, you know, being able to like stitch all the videos together and have like one file. And you can't even notice like when you change devices, but it just had me thinking like there are some real opportunities for how iOS handles low storage. And, you know, especially with like great cameras that can, and this is like with a 512 gigabyte iPhone with just a lot of stuff on it. I imagine people with 64 gigabyte phones can run into this much more frequently. So it's a pain.
Yeah, I mean, if you've got a 512 gigabyte phone,
yeah,
you're also just more likely to fill it up with other stuff.
Yeah, so.
Put when it you all have on those, there. Yeah, when you have those situations where it's like, oh, I need to take a video, you've probably got the effective amount percentage remaining as anybody else does. Like,
yeah,
and
yeah.
If you take, you know, 4K or high frame rate video, you use that space up very quickly. If you're doing a 4K video, it's what, like 400 megabytes a minute or something? It's like ridiculous.
Yes. Yeah. And I ended up doing like, I put all the videos together as like one file, but then like no one's going to watch. Like, well, the idea is like in 20 years, I will totally watch 30 minutes of like my kids opening Christmas presents. But
yeah,
like this week, no one's going to watch that. So what I did, what I would have done anyway is like take highlights of the experience that are like shareable and put those together as like a 5-minute video. And that's what I did. But the whole thing was just like, for years, storage, like the way that photos and videos and optimized storage works has been a real pain, because it's just like, you don't get much control over it. You know, you get more control over how much music you can automatically put. Like, we've discussed that last year and, it's not been fixed yet. Really. It's kind of stagnant.
Yeah. Low storage has been a problem for any operating system ever, I'm pretty sure, whether it's iOS, macOS, Windows.
I mean,
anytime
Mac,
you
like,
get LAN storage, everything breaks apart. I was converting a load of movies over Christmas that I was going to go then put on my server, but I needed to transcode them on my Mac first, and that filled up my SSD on my Mac, and it grinded to a halt.
Yep.
And I couldn't really do anything. I could turn the computer off. That was about it.
Yeah.
Like, and especially with, so this is clearly a hard problem, and there's not good choices for, there's not an obvious pattern of what Apple can change necessarily. But right. When you run out of storage, you run out of storage, and the operating system needs storage to do stuff. So there's nothing like plain or simple about the problem. In specific to optimizing storage on photos, mm-hmm. The problem there is everything to do with iCloud Photo Library is about preserving your photos at all costs. Mm-hmm. Syncing and related processes are done, but they're done to minimize data loss, not to be quick.
Right, yep.
So anything you do with iCloud Photos, which I keep calling iCloud Photo Library, but I'm trying to train myself to call it by its new name, which is just iCloud Photos.
It'll change next week, don't worry.
Yeah, iOS 13, it'll be something completely different. If you take pictures, delete pictures, make edits, they eventually catch up on all your devices, but it can take a long time, mm-hmm. depending on what's happening, especially when you get like a new phone and it's syncing all the pictures and stuff moves around and swips around and the numbers at the totals at the bottom can take like days to get back in sync, but eventually they get there. And going from storing originals to optimize storage is just another example of that, where Apple wants to, when you switch that tag over, I'm pretty sure what happens is they check every single picture on your phone to make sure there's a copy of it in the cloud.
Yep.
They go through every single one. And obviously, if you have a big library, it takes forever. And then they also make thumbnails of every single one, which then get downloaded and saved. And as a thumbnail comes in, it then deletes the original from the local storage.
Yeah.
And so that process takes a very long time, especially your library is what, like 100,000 pictures, probably 50,000 pictures, like a big library. It takes forever. Even if you're only taking 1 second per photo, that's still a long time. Mm-hmm. So, like, what you feel like you're doing when you go from originals to optimize is immediately
freeing up
all the storage space is disappearing, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But it's just not what happens.
Right.
And what iOS probably should do is see that you're recording video, and when you get to the 10 gigabyte low mark, it needs to tell you you need to do something about your storage space. Because by the time you're at the, you know, 1 gig free space, it's too late. Like, it almost has to ask even earlier. But the problem is when you ask even earlier, and you thought you're only going to take, like, you knew you're only going to take a 2 minute video today, it would be annoying for it to pop up when you had 10% storage left. People would be like, Apple's just trying to force us to buy the higher tier storage because, look, I've got plenty of storage left, but it's not popping up. But obviously, you knew that you were taking video for an hour or whatever, not taking a video and stopping a second later. Mm-hmm. So it's all about like guessing what you're trying to do, and it's going to get it wrong even in perfect cases.
Yeah, I think Google Photos has like a nuke all option where if it's local, it erases, you know. And like you said, like that's just not how iCloud Photos works, and it would take a lot of changing for that to be the case. Like it's not an instant fix. And that's where I thought I was getting creative, and I thought, oh, I'll just nuke all my music, because that all is Apple Music. Like, it's just playlists. I don't care about the local files. and at that point, the system was just too bogged down where it was like that. That's almost like what the problem ultimately was that when these systems are low in storage, you've got to fix that before they can become responsive again.
The thing iCloud Photo Library, I've said it wrong again, could maybe do is a mode where it doesn't even make thumbnails. Because at the moment, when you go to optimize, it still stores gigabytes of thumbnails. Like, even if you have really small thumbnails, if you've got 50,000 photos, that's a lot of thumbnails. So there could be an even more stricter iCloud Photos option, which would mean you see a load of just placeholder squares, and you'd never get any, and it would mess up when you go to like the overall year's view, because you just see nothing. You just see black boxes or grey boxes rather than all those pretty little thumbnails across the board. But that would actually maximize the storage optimization and store the least amount of data on the phone, and also be faster when you're switching from store all to store, basically nothing.
The thing about iCloud Photos is like it's been the case for for years now that we've wanted a little bit more control over what you can do with it. Like, because the idea is like you get two options: everything's local or everything is, or there's some optimization going on in the background, and you can't say like, I want the last 5 gigabytes based on like the most recently taken photos to be local and like things from ages ago not to be, for like if they're favorites or if they're on an album, you know, there's no like granularity there where you get more control on how much music can automatically be downloaded to your phone. You know, they treat that differently. But yeah, it is, I don't fuck, none of it is like the fault, of anyone but me for not at least like checking that box ahead of time. But it was an interesting thing. It's like, I can sympathize with people with less storage, especially like, I think the only thing that bothered me the most is that a modal alert like that can stop the video. And, I mean, the alert was to say like, we're out of space, buddy, but it also, it ends the video and then you gotta start again. Like, it would be nice if iOS could have made like decisions in the background to say like, you know, here's a bunch of cached, you know, data that is up for grabs to be going away anyway. Let's get rid of that and make room for this rest of this video. And I don't think that happened. I think it was just like, can't do any more photos and videos. So yeah, pick up the iPad. It was a good fix. It was like, you know, but, and I also had my Sony camera in my hand, like taking still photos too, because I wanted to have both video and photos, like good pictures too. So, but it ended up working out. It was just next Christmas, I will have like a game plan. It will be like, you know, if you go camping for the weekend or something, you've got like a checklist. I'll be like, okay, I know I'm going to want to record a lot of videos. So let me go through this list and like make sure that I've got enough storage for these files to show up, you know?
Yeah. You'll have pressed optimize storage on December the 1st.
Exactly. Plenty of time I had the lesson learned there. This week, 9to5Mac Happy Hour is sponsored by Hyper. This week at CES 2019, Hyper is showing off its new USB-C hub for iPad Pro, the world's first design specifically for the 2018 iPad Pro, already completely funded on Kickstarter and ready to ship starting this month. You can get the new iPad Pro hub for 40% off as a pre-order special for the rest of the week. By connecting this hub to your iPad Pro's USB-C port, the new Hyper USB-C hub adds 6 new ports to your device, including 4K HDMI, a 3.5mm audio jack, SD, microSD, USB-A 3.0, and USB-C with power delivery. You'll also notice a removable and replaceable rubber grip that securely holds the hub in place without blemishing the iPad Pro surface. It's made to allow the hub to work flawlessly with the Apple Smart Keyboard Folio, unlike some other hub options on the market, but also removable and replaceable to allow for compatibility with other cases too. The new Hyper USB-C hub for iPad Pro is compatible with both 11 and 12.9-inch iPad Pro, with or without Smart Keyboard Folio. And it comes in space gray or silver color aluminum enclosure options to match the new devices. Get the Hyper USB-C hub for iPad Pro on Kickstarter now for a special $59 pre-order price. That's a $40 savings from the regular $99 price. Check out the link in the show notes or on 9to5Mac.com for more information. Our thanks to Hyper for sponsoring 9to5Mac Happy Hour. All right, Mayo, over the weekend and in the beginning of this week, we had a couple of kind of neat hardware leaks about future products. And the first one is the most interesting. It is an iPhone with – it is like a camera bump. It's like a camera mountain or so. It's a camera plateau. I don't know. Tell me what's going on with this iPhone 11 rumor.
Yeah. So just as a very quick summary, because there isn't many leaks. What have we heard about the next generation iPhone so far? Basically nothing, except that there's still going to be 3 models in probably the same screen sizes, which implies not major design changes across the board, because typically if there's a chassis change, they need to change the screens somewhat. And we've heard a few rumors from Kuo and other people that Apple has been looking into adding time of flight depth sensors to the back camera to join the front camera, and so they have more fine-grained depth information than the current system, where they kind of use 2 different angles and then compute the overlay. That's it. Quo has said he needed more time. He like apologized in his statement in his little report in the end of 2018 that normally you'd have details on the new iPhones by now, but that's going to have to wait till the first quarter. So for some reason, it's taking a little bit longer than normal. But we're still kind of in the dark. And then on Sunday, this render came out, which is not a mock-up or a fan idea. It's not just like a pigment of someone's imagination, supposedly. It is meant to be a render of a supply chain leak of an early stage prototype for whatever you want to call next gen iPhone 2019 model.
Maybe we say iPhone 11 for the sake of the podcast. Yeah,
I think iPhone 11 is a name that they might actually use as well. So, on Leaks, who has proven pretty reliable in the past, he had CAD drawings of the 2018 iPad Pro that you own, Zach. He had them early September, and they tend to be completely accurate, including like the gap for the magnetic attachment for the Apple Pencil 2 and stuff like that. And it even showed the iPhone 5 square edges and the antenna line layout, which is quite a significant change from the iPad Pro that came before it. And the CADs were what people would say wonky until they saw them, and then they were proven to be correct. He has partnered with this website called DigiIndia to make renders of what he says is the EVT prototype for the iPhone 11. And Apple hardware development process is roughly EVT, which is engineering validation test. And then there's another stage where it goes to, which is DVT, which is design validation test. And then it's production validation test. And at production validation test, the design is completely locked down and they're just working out how they can scale it to millions of shipments and get it out to the factories.
Right.
So this is earlier on in the prototype cycle. But even at this point, a lot of it's pretty well locked down, especially the general themes of the ideas. Like, even at this point, it's, can we actually do this? Not, should we do this particular design? If you see what I mean. It's like, could we put this material here? Can we make this? Does it actually, like, work? And if it works, they'll just carry on. Like, it's not this is just an experiment, because the experiments don't leave Apple HQ. When they're going to factories for, like, test runs, essentially, then it's the design's actually honing on
there's some chance that what happens here could be what ships in the future, barring anything unforeseen.
Yeah, if they don't have any problems,
right,
this is just the design. That's probably, obviously, it's a bit of an oversimplification, but roughly, that's the policy. So now we can move on to what we can see. And we don't see the front of the phone at all, which we'll get to in a minute. But they have pictures of the back, and it looks like the same iPhone X, XS style that we know and love, except for the camera bump is completely different.
Yes.
The camera bump is, rather than a vertical strip, it is a rectangle, which seems to be square, the same dimension on top, left, right, and bottom, and it's rounded, so it almost looks like an Apple Watch case.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Plonked in the top left corner of the iPhone. And in that, I'd say it looks about twice as wide as the current vertical strip.
Yeah, two and a half times, yeah.
Yeah, maybe a bit more. Yeah, like 2.5 times probably. So it's pretty big, right? It looks about the same height, but 2.5 times as wide. And inside this rectangle, you have the two cameras in the same place you'd expect them to be. And then you have a third camera, which is like in the middle right. You have the flash, which is like above it, but it's not in line with the top left camera hole. It's even higher than that, further nestled into the corner. And then you have the microphone, the noise cancellation microphone, below all of it on like the bottom right hand side. Again, not perfectly in line with anything, really.
Yeah.
And it kind of looks ugly.
Yeah, it's like two columns, but then three or five. It's like two columns and five rows. And
it's like the design of the left column is completely independent to the design of the right column.
Yeah, the two columns are lined up, but the five rows are not. It's a zigzag there.
Yeah, like if you took the horizontal centers, they basically wouldn't cross anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It is, and it's not symmetrical by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah, and so that's one aspect of this. And then there's just the aspect of, like, that's not just a camera bump, but that is just like a massive... raised part of this iPhone. And like when you look at the rest of the iPhone unchanged, it makes it just look like totally unnatural. Which would make you guess like there's no way this happens because that looks ridiculous compared to what we have today.
And if you say, if you look at like the competition in the Android space, other manufacturers have done square designs, but they do have the cameras in what I think most people would call like the sensible arrangement, which is one in each corner in lined up. So like Huawei have a three camera phone out at the moment, which is a camera in the top left, a camera in the bottom left, a camera in the bottom right, and then the flash in the top right.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all the same size, so it's symmetrical inside of the bump. And I believe on the Huawei phone, the bump's actually centered as well. It's not in the top left, like what the iPhone does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you were just going to show two people offhand, which one do you think was made designed by Apple? I think instinctively people are going to pick the symmetrical one.
Right, right, yeah.
And this is not symmetrical.
But yeah, this looks like there's a lot going on here. It's like, could Apple actually do this? And I think if we look back, we have a lot of these moments where we look at some leaks and we're like, there's no way this is going to happen. And then turns out it happens. And then another thing is like, what usually happens is there's some reason, and we could totally see like Apple saying this arrangement. And internally, that's like the only way this would all fit with this like thinness of iPhone, or even like without going much thicker or some reason. Something about, you know, what's on the other side of it or this whole arrangement. So,
like the iPhone 4 is a good example of that, yes, right? Like, yeah. Before the iPhone 4 was a thing, we obviously got the Gizmodo leak where everyone could see what it looked like.
The actual hardware was discovered, right?
Yeah. And it was radically new and radically different to the 3GS, and it looked very pretty, but people complained that there were these weird lines in the side of the band, mm-hmm. the little black insert lines. And in the lead up to the event, everyone was like, what are these lines doing here? What are these lines doing here? That isn't like Apple. And Jobs just addressed it. He was like, he literally had a whole slide, which is, people have seen this design before, and they've wondered, what are these lines?
What are these lines? Yeah, he's like,
and he literally like sags in his like standing position. He's like, this is an Apple, like the most sardonic comment. Like, and then he just explains what it is. He's like,
it turns
this is
out,
part, yeah, this is the antenna system, and it's never been done before. It's really feature, cool yeah. engineering, yeah. And everyone claps. But obviously, that explanation doesn't change the aesthetics. It still looks ugly if you thought it looked ugly
still
before.
Compromised visually, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And you can take that premise and you can apply it to the antenna lines on the iPhone 6, because that was one of my like first big articles on 9to5 Mac was pictures of the iPhone 6 prototypes. And everyone was like, well, that must be masking tape, because the line, you know, the antenna lines on the iPhone 6 were huge. They went like left to right, right on the back.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, oh, it must be masking tape just holding the phone in place. Turns out, no, that's what the antenna lines look like.
And then two generations, or at least that year, and then they
yep.
improved on it.
Yeah, so. And then you had, obviously, the camera bump as a thing at all. Everyone was like, oh, Apple will always keep it perfectly in line and flush. No, there's the camera bump. Then they make the camera bump bigger when they do like the 7 Plus, and they have to put two cameras on it. And then the one that I can recall in recent memory is when the iPhone 10 schematics were going around. Obviously, the dual camera system changed from horizontal to vertical. And everyone said, oh, but the vertical camera system looks terrible. And obviously, that's what came out and that's what shipped. And I think a lot of people now would say the vertical camera looks better. I remember thinking that I thought the horizontal camera looked slightly better, but oh, it's a compromise because they can't fit it in the internal size, so they have to go the other way around. Okay. But now I look at like an 8 Plus or a 7 Plus, and I'm like, wait, the horizontal just looks wrong. Like it looks better now than it did before. So there's definitely these like adjustment periods, and people love to flatten, stamp on these rumors, because so many of these mock-ups are just made by random fans. But I think this one is from a decent enough source that there is actually truth behind it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Maybe we should start getting used to this idea of a giant Apple Watch-sized camera bump on the back of the iPhone that isn't centered in any way,
and with cameras that don't line up with each other.
Yeah, has some sort of random, but likely there's a reason assortment.
It's like someone slipped while they put the third camera in, and they're like, "Whoop! Oh dear, it's in the wrong it's in the wrong bit." Like, the thing that gets me the most is that the flash circle is not nestled in the corner of the radius like the other one, the two on the left are. If it was actually lined up, it would be further down and or further to the right, but it's not. It's in like this very weird placement.
There's a lot you could do with this to improve the way it looks.
Yeah, and again, this is not a final prototype. It's an early-ish prototype, but realistically, it's not going to be that different. Maybe they can change the alignment a bit, but I think the general gist of an Apple Watch case slapped on the back of the phone with three cameras in some arrangement, I think that's probably going to happen.
I don't think the existing iPhone cases are going to fit this. I think you need to change your case out.
Yeah, unless you like hollow it out somehow.
line up the Apple Watch and just cut around it.
Now, there are a couple of interesting like spin-offs to this. One thing that I'd heard from a source at the end of last year is that the 10R replacement is going from one camera to two cameras this year. And now that we've seen this three-camera design, that kind of makes more sense in my head, because it wouldn't be like all three have the same camera arrangement. It would be the 10R gets an upgrade to basically last year's camera system. Mm-hmm. And then the high-end replacements, the 11, now get this three-camera system that will presumably be better in different ways.
Yeah.
So that kind of lines up with what I'd heard. And then second, there's this speculation going around on Twitter that this design of bump will mean that the notch is smaller. Which is an interesting proposition, because obviously none of these renders show the front. But it kind of makes sense if you think about it, because if you take, like, not a Max, but you take a normal-sized iPhone X or XS, and you imagine that you make the camera twice as wide internally, as it is today, that would directly be in the same place where the Face ID sensors are.
Yeah, yeah, because these things and have depth to
I
them,
don't so think they're... it would fit. So the speculation is that Apple's going to remove the earpiece from the front notch and maybe put it on like the top, which is, again, we've seen some Android manufacturers do that.
Yeah.
And that will make the notch less wide and therefore make room for this internally for the bigger camera system to be in place.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be nice, because then people, and then you actually get like some sort of visual change on the front as well. Obviously, it's not dramatic. It's still a notch. It's just a bit smaller. But then you can at least look at the front and be like, this looks different as well.
Maybe AT&T Wi-Fi wouldn't be AT&T WIF then. And people could maybe get back their battery percentage indicator too, the percentage part of that.
People love the battery percentage. I see that constantly on like Reddit and stuff. People, I just want to put the battery percentage back in the bar.
I have it turned off on my iPad, because then you can do control center and still see it, I think. And it's just like more minimal, you know. And people, it's the top mention, like a thing people want for sure. I mean, I'm not going to complain if the notch gets slimmer. I like that idea. And then also the idea of having, like, you've already got stereo speakers when they use, you know, the speaker. Like, the iPhone's funny. Like, the bottom of the iPhone looks like there's two speakers, but there's really just one. And then they also use the earpiece as a speaker for stereo and landscape. But one fires toward you and one fires away. To the side, and if the earpiece moved up, like it'd be closer to stereo, like and directionally too, I'd be all for that. And I am firmly in the camp there that I hope that this camera arrangement improves. Like, I've been staring at it now for several minutes, and it's not growing on me yet. I don't know.
There's a word, and I'm blanking on it, which is like fear of loads of circles next to each other. It's some like anno something phobia.
Uh-huh.
And I think people are going to get triggered if they actually look at this picture. Like,
the Apple Watch home screen? The honeycomb home screen?
Yeah. Finally, one last thing I want to talk about this is, what is that third lens? Because I've been calling it a camera. And it might be like, because obviously we have the 1x zoom, and then we have the 2x zoom.
Yeah.
It could be like a 3x zoom macro. It could be an ultra wide camera. Or it might just be a depth sensor, which kind of ties into the time of flight depth sensor.
Which is kind of disappointing if it's not like a third camera that you have access to, right?
Yeah, I mean, it all depends what can they do with it, right? If they can have, if this depth information provides a way for the camera algorithms to take really, really better pictures somehow,
yeah,
then it'll be fine, right? Like, if the pictures are noticeably better in that dimension, then okay. If it's a 3x zoom, then that's obviously more tangible, but cool, right? New feature. If it was like, oh, all your ARKit apps are slightly more accurate at positioning stuff, and the measure thing goes from 5% accuracy to 1% accuracy, then it's like a waste of time, and why do they bother doing this and compromising the design of the phone to add this thing just to make AR stuff as we know it today, which is disappointing, marginally improved.
Yeah, that's not going to go well.
That would not go down well.
Yeah. Trypophobia, is that what you're looking for?
Yeah, probably. It sounds something like that.
Yeah, it's condensation on bottles, some honeycomb stuff. I'm not triggered, but I can appreciate it. Yeah, I will be honest here. The idea of there being some year-over-year camera improvement that isn't just like the quality, but like there's something functional that you can do more of, like going from one to two cameras, there's something functional you can do. The idea of them pushing that even further excites me, even at the cost of this giant camera plateau mountain bulge. Because I like when the camera gets better on the iPhone, because I use it so much. And like portrait mode, I'm not like totally sold on it. I use it, and the fact that you can't like really botch a picture that way, you can always turn off the effect, helps. I do wish that the iPhone XS and XS Max could do the same portrait like zoom level as what the XR does, where there's no 2x applied to it, that you could just take like, oh, here's a picture, I want this to be portrait mode, not zoomed in. I'd like that to be an option. Maybe the
that is it. You've cracked it. That is what this third camera provides. Yeah. That's it.
Yeah. So I just over the weekend thinking about this picture, it's like the design, we'll see what shakes out, but more exciting is the idea of like something new that the camera can do, maybe even with video, because like you don't really, with video you get 1x of 2x video, but you don't get anything with depth really, so it'd be neat if they could do something with video. But just in general, like, you know, this will be something that we look back on and kind of grade is like, how did that rumor pan out? And,
I think it'll be more accurate than a lot of people react to it as. Like, a lot of people pass it off as just stupid, but I think this will be definitely in the ballpark, and we'll see. The thing that makes me laugh is I can just imagine, like, Minchi Kuo getting a schematic drawing of this in, like, November and being like, this doesn't look right. I'll come back in February when I can get some more sources on it.
Yeah, we need a new word for this too. Like, camera bump doesn't quite do it, and bulge, I don't like the connotation there.
So. Camera square.
It wouldn't be bad if it was a small square. It's the size of it that's.
Camera dinner plate? Camera platter?
Yeah, camera 17-inch MacBook Pro.
For me, the size of the bump is less offensive than the positioning of the things inside it.
Totally. Like the size of the bump, like, it's what you can do with the camera that like grows on you, like it makes the sacrifice grow on you. And so like if you can do some really cool stuff with this, then it's like, yeah, I've got this giant camera bump because my phone can do X, Y, and Z. But if it's just like, you know, it's better AR, it's like, ah, I don't want that phone. So
yeah, if it's better AR, I'll be saying, oh,
go crazy. Yeah. So we'll see how this goes, but it's neat to have a January entry into the iPhone 11 rumor season when there hasn't been much yet to go on. So this week, 9to5 Mac Happy Hour is sponsored by ExpressVPN. With all the recent news about online security breaches, it's hard not to worry about where your data goes. Making an online purchase or simply accessing your email could put your private information at risk. You're being tracked online by social media sites, marketing companies, and your mobile or internet provider. Not only can they record your browsing history, but they can often sell it to corporations who want to profit from your information. That's why we recommend taking back your privacy by using ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN has easy-to-use apps that run seamlessly in the background of your computer, phone, or tablet. Turning on ExpressVPN protection only takes one click, and ExpressVPN secures and anonymizes your internet browsing by encrypting your data and hiding your public IP address. Protecting yourself with ExpressVPN costs less than $7 a month, and ExpressVPN is rated the number one VPN service by TechRadar. It also comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you ever use public Wi-Fi and want to keep hackers and spies from seeing your data, ExpressVPN is the solution. If you don't want to hand over your online history to your internet service provider or data resellers, ExpressVPN is the answer. ExpressVPN also removes restrictions and creates internet without borders, defeating online content restrictions and censorship to deliver unlimited access to videos, music, social media, and more from anywhere in the world. And ExpressVPN offers unlimited bandwidth with a VPN that's built for speed. Protect your online activity today and find out how you can get 3 months free at expressvpn.com/happyhour. That's expressvpn.com/happyhour for 3 months free with a 1 year package. expressvpn.com/happyhour to learn more. Our thanks to ExpressVPN for sponsoring 9 to 5 Mac Happy Hour. All right, Mayo. So the whole camera thing, that happened on Sunday, and I was out of town visiting family and kind of doing like a long drive home. And, so I didn't really like see it play out online. The other thing that happened Sunday was it was preview of CES stuff going on. Like CES officially starts on like Tuesday of this week is when it started. But as of Sunday, like there were press events for companies, and it was almost like a major Apple announcement, of like what's coming in software soon with AirPlay 2 video support on TVs and TVs becoming a category in HomeKit, and not just with like an Apple TV, but like built into the TV. I think it's really a big announcement, like in terms of like what could have been part of another event is like just on its own out here. And then like what it does is also pretty interesting. But what's kind of your summary here of what's been announced this week?
Yeah. So Samsung announced first, followed by Vizio, LG and Sony. They, as always, it's like whenever we do about Apple TV or anything TV related, like we were doing earlier, it's always more complicated than a one line summary.
Yeah.
Some of these TVs get HomeKit. Some of these TVs get AirPlay 2. The Samsung TVs do not show up in the Home app. The Vizio, LG, and Sony ones do. They all have AirPlay 2, so from an AirPlay 2 video in particular support. So if you have your iPhone on you, all of them, if you're watching a video on your phone, you can press the AirPlay button and you can press beam to TV. Mm-hmm. And you won't beam to the Apple TV like set-top box, you'll be beaming to the actual TV. And it'll just play the video on the TV. And in most situations, you'll also be able to multitask away on your phone and do something else while the video is still going. Mm-hmm. Or if you're on the iPad, you could put the iPad to sleep or whatever and leave it on the coffee table while the video plays on the screen. If you have the HomeKit compatible TVs, then you can use Siri to do the same thing. And this is in the same way as like, if you have a HomePod, but you're not connected to the HomeKit Home, you can AirPlay music to it, but you can't use Siri to, say, play music in the living room because your local device will not know what devices are in the living room because it's not associated to the HomeKit Home.
Yeah, if you have any AirPlay 2 speaker, even aside from HomePod, like the Sonos Beam soundbar or any of the Sonos speakers for that matter, they're... you know, through software updates, they're AirPlay 2 speakers. And then so you can aim audio to them from the iPhone or iPad or whatever. And that's regardless of what HomeKit's doing, it's an AirPlay 2 speaker. But then you need to have it in the Home app through HomeKit to be able to, like you said, talk to Siri and say, play everywhere, play in this room, because the Home app is what gives it a name in the environment of like a room. So it would have been way more confusing had I not had that experience with AirPlay 2 speakers to know like what is AirPlay 2 and what is HomeKit. But because of that experience, then we can say, okay, so if it's AirPlay 2, you can beam video to it. And if it's HomeKit, you can use Siri to tell it to beam video, basically. Plus, we think there'll be some more stuff through software, like through iOS updates, that HomeKit means more for a TV than it does now, you know, from what we know.
Yeah, because on the AirPlay page, a lot of this is all just listed as coming soon and
yeah.
to change and expand. Because one of the things they mention is that you can say to your HomeKit TV, "Hello Siri, play Game of Thrones on my living room TV."
Mm-hmm.
And it will apparently magically know what to do and start playing Game of Thrones on the television. But obviously there are some gotchas here. Where is it getting the video from? Is it only getting it from the iTunes store? Is it getting it from other sources? If you don't own the movie, is it going to start playing? Well, no, because you don't own it. So is it going to then pop up on your phone saying, do you want to rent it now or buy it now? Like, that process is more complicated than just the one-line utterance of the Siri request.
Yeah.
If you look at what they do with music, it's probably going to be... Because with music, it's Apple's music only. Because if you have your iPhone today and you go up to an AirPlay 2 device, you can ask your phone just to play an artist in the living room and it will load that up from Apple Music and start beaming it over AirPlay 2. So if they take that as the same pattern, this video request will be connected to the iTunes Store movie and TV shows. Which is obviously a bummer if you use other video services or you have like Plex like I do, where you obviously have, you know, a big library of stuff that you want to play, but Siri won't be able to know about it. That's what I think it will be. And unless they announce new APIs, that'll be what it is, because there'll be another way for it to work.
Mm-hmm.
But I would expect, whether it's 12.3, 12.2, that same feature will be deployed to the Apple TV. So you can ask your Apple TV to do it as well. Like, I don't think these features are going to be just if you have a smart TV that supports this. It will be, they'll event all the stuff you can do with the smart TV will also come to the Apple TV at the same time. They haven't confirmed that, but that's what I think will happen.
I sure hope so. I mean, like, all of this is just like in the context of CES, even like what Apple's announced and like on the AirPlay 2 page. It's just like TV's coming soon. So we can't try it yet. I don't think if you had one of these TVs like iOS that we have today would work with it. Like, it's going to be a future version of iOS. And so I really hope that what we see in the future, like alongside this, is that the Apple TV experience gets the same treatment. I mean, wasn't it Vizio that had some kind of promise about like not like HomeKit will not just mean Siri control from iPhone or whatever to play it on the Apple TV, but that also it would be involved in automation?
Yeah, they said with HomeKit you'll be able to change the volume, change input, turn the TV on and off. Again, because it's like the flurry of CES, PR reps say a lot of different things and you can't immediately trust them. So they might have slipped the tongue when they mention automation versus just control. Because if you AirPlay something, those now playing controls will show up in Control Center on the lock screen and you can change the volume, play and pause.
Yeah.
Today. And even changing the input, I assume that will just happen automatically. If you start AirPlaying something, it will go from whatever you're watching and it will change to the AirPlay input.
Yeah.
So everything they described could be done in a much more boring way with features that we could see today.
Yeah, this is the point that caught my attention in their press release. This is from Vizio. HomeKit allows customers to easily and securely control smart home products using the Home app or by asking Siri on their Apple devices. And here's the good part. Vizio SmartCast TVs can be added to the Home app and included in scenes or automations like any other HomeKit accessory. So that last part, that isn't true for like the Apple TV yet. It can't be a part of a scene or an automation.
Like, or the HomePod couldn't be if you wanted to do music-based automation.
Yeah, no, AirPlay 2 speakers can be yet, even if they're in the Home app. Like, it's just to assign a room so that Siri knows what you're talking about. And then they mentioned the thing about like iPhone and iPad to do the volume and stuff and all that. And I think that's aligns with what you said with the lock screen stuff. It's like, just because it's playing from, you know, this is the device that initiated it. It works out. But the scene and automation stuff, like being able to say it's movie time and like have the TV turn on and switch to the right like input or whatever, like, you know, or automation, good night, and the TV powers off, like, you know, the Apple TV could be a part of that if you said just like, you know, HDMI CEC, and when the Apple TV turns off, the TV does too. but you can't do that yet. And so that will be a totally new thing if this part of the press release from Vizio, like one of the four companies, is correct. It could be wrong, but we'll see.
Because the apple.com/AirPlay page does not mention scenes or automation.
Yeah, and they've mentioned like Siri turn off the TV for a long time by way of putting your TV on a smart plug. And I don't know if anyone's ever got that to go right. Like, because the thing is, like, turn off the TV, TV's off, turn it back on, TV's powered, but it's not on yet until you turn it on with the remote. So some people have had luck with that, but I've not ever been able to incorporate the TV into a scene like that. So
yeah, some TVs turn on when the power comes on and some TVs don't. So
yeah, okay. So this gives me optimism, Vizio does, that all of these that work with HomeKit will have these abilities. Because that's pretty interesting if you can make your TV part of, you know, all these other smart scenes. And that is a totally new thing for HomeKit that hasn't existed before now.
Yeah, and I've been hoping for music automation stuff. So if they're going to do it for video, that would assumably mean music does it as well.
Yeah, it could be a big year for HomeKit in that regard, like for new features to come.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'd love it. And obviously you can see some future where the limitation on it only being iTunes Store might be expanded to a future Apple Video Service or maybe partners and stuff down the road. But I think at launch, it'll probably just be your iTunes Store content.
Yeah. And so let's kind of frame this as like what this news is. So before now, to AirPlay Video, you needed to have an Apple TV, like whatever generation Apple TV needed to have an Apple TV to AirPlay Video, connect to a TV. Couldn't be to the TV directly. Or if you had iTunes movies and TV shows or like whatever kind of video on an iPhone or iPad or Mac, you needed to plug it in with a wire if there was no Apple TV. So something in the middle there. And so this will be the first time that you can AirPlay video. There have been, like, I think it might even be Vizio that had AirPlay as part of the TV, but that's always been audio only, right? And this is the first time that video is part of it.
Yeah. So Apple licensed audio AirPlay for years and years and years and years. When they introduced video AirPlay with Apple TV back in 2010, there were some rumors that they were going to license that to third parties too, but they never did.
2010, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like 8 years ago, rumors. And they never did it until obviously now.
Yeah.
And if there are some like dodgy Android apps that you can download that kind of pretend to be an iOS device to try and make it work, and like there are a few hacks and stuff, but officially Apple never licensed anyone but themselves. And that is obviously changing here with these smart TVs. Mm-hmm. And I hope it is not the end. I hope they start licensing video AirPlay to like projectors and all sorts of other devices that connect to TVs, as well as TVs themselves, because a huge market of Apple TV buyers are just people who want to use AirPlay. And that sounds wrong, but if you actually think about it, education and enterprise, like business customers, they buy Apple TVs to attach to their like conference room TVs, and that's all they do, just for AirPlay, because they need to mirror the iPad screen.
It made more sense when you could buy an Apple TV for $100 or even $70, but it makes less sense when it's $150.
Yeah, but they still do it because there's no other option until right now, right?
Yep.
And it's such a big market that there's even a conference display mode that you can turn on in Apple TV settings. And when you do that on the screen, it will give instructions on screen instructions to AirPlay to this screen. Go to this Wi-Fi network and select, you know, conference to Apple TV. Yep. Like, it was such an important part of the market that Apple went out of their way to add a setting like that. And you don't have to have an enterprise profile installed or anything. It's just in the settings. You can just go and find it.
Yeah, my dentist used that when I had my wisdom teeth removed. I remember seeing that and noticing it right before I slipped to being asleep.
Yeah, and even their like Apple the partnership program that Apple does with schools that need investment, like
the STEM schools
and low opportunity schools, right? Low income schools.
Yeah.
Their Connect Ed program, which is what they call it, is part of the pitch. Every classroom gets an Apple TV.
Yep.
And why? Because every classroom's getting iPads and people want to show what's on their iPad on the screen for the rest of the class to see. Mm-hmm. And to date, the only way to do that was to buy an Apple TV, plug it in, have to change inputs on the TV to go to the Apple TV to then project if you ever want to use the normal TV for anything else, mess around with Siri remotes, mess around with Apple TV software updates, all of that baloney, right? And now people can just get a TV and it can do it all in one go.
Yeah. Now,
and it's fantastic.
I think that also, like, So Apple makes iPhones, but they don't make a television. They make a set-top box with the Apple TV, but they don't make a TV itself. And the companies like LG and Sony, to some extent, and Samsung largely, they make a lot of TVs and they make Android phones. And I think that, like, each of those brands has also had, like, some version of AirPlay, you know, that they have themselves. Like, if you happen to have an LG phone and an LG TV, that there's some connection you can do there that's like LG branded.
Correct. And a lot of them even have support for a standard called DLNA. Not DNA, DLNA, which does video streaming. So you could have pretty much any Android phone from the last 4 years and stream to any TV made in the last, you know, half decade.
Yeah.
And this, generally do it.
Yeah. This.
So literally it was a feature that Apple customers couldn't do.
Yeah, you were just out of that world if you had an iPhone, even if you
had pleased the Apple gods by buying a $100 set-top box minimum.
Right. Like maybe you can get like my LG TV, I can download an app and I can do some like Wi-Fi based stuff to, like, control it with the TV has an iPhone app. That is like a TV remote. It's really bad. So I don't use it, but it's possible. Like, there's some special stuff with apps you can do there, but not like built into it, built into like iOS. And now there's a thing that's built into iOS that will work with TVs without adding software to the mix. So, and backing up to the promise of automation with scenes and automation with part of HomeKit. Sony mentions it too. They say these TVs can be added to the Home app and included in scenes and automation with other HomeKit accessories. So it's almost like the same line as Vizio. It makes me think it comes from Apple. They say, for example, users can create a movie night scene in the Home app and easily turn on their TV and dim the lights, and then simply ask Siri to launch the scene. So because there's two companies, I'm now more optimistic that these will work and with new automations and feature versions of the Home app and feature versions.
Yeah, because if you look at the HomePod, you can tap the tile in the Home app to play and pause it.
Yeah,
you can't do anything else. That's all you can play and pause it.
It cannot be part of a scene or an automation.
But you cannot automate the play and pause command. No.
Yeah.
So that would be a change.
Yeah.
And hopefully they do it. That'd be cool.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be neat. And so both Vizio and Sony say it. There was a period where we thought, like, you know, it's just Samsung doing something weird. And then it was LG too. And then it was Vizio too. And then like several hours went by and, you know, you and I had a chat where it was like, is Sony really going to be left out here? That's weird. Like they play nice with Apple in lots of ways. And it just, the timing was just, they hadn't had their press event yet. And that's when and it was like Monday night instead of Sunday morning. But I think now we're caught up now. Like, these are the four companies, and then there's a list on Apple's website of like what TVs will be included. And, I think,
well, you have an LG TV, but you're not in the blessed group.
Yeah. This is another thing that's really annoying is that some companies are promising to support backwards. So like 2017, 2018, 2019 TVs. I think LG is only promising 2019 TVs. So,
yep.
Yeah. And it's an LG OLED TV. It's 55 inches, so it isn't like the biggest that they make, but it wasn't cheap. And it's not something that I would replace within 2 years because of this feature, especially with an Apple TV in the mix. It's like that is an appliance that costs a lot and won't, you know, it has to stick around. Like, there's no way I could flip that for nearly what it costs. So then, I mean, TVs have been. Newer models have come about, so like its value has been shot.
So. Yeah, I didn't fact check this, but I saw someone on Twitter say that every TV on the AirPlay 2 list is at least $1,500 to buy.
I could see that,
So they are not the cheap. Like, what I'm getting at here, they're not the cheap TVs that make up the vast majority of the TV market.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they're only starting now, so even at most, they're going to sell like 30 million this year total, including software updates to like the Vizio 2017 models, right? Like, but it's going to take a while for these to become commonplace. Like, it's not going to be an overnight thing because people keep their TVs for a very, very long time. And the vast majority of customers buy TVs that are not $1,500 in price. So
yeah, so for LG, it's all 2019. For Samsung, there's 2019 and 2018 in the mix. Sony is 2019 across the board. And then Vizio is the most generous. They do 2019 and 2018 on Quantum models, and then 2019, 18, and 17 on P, M, E, and D series TVs. So they go back more than anyone. And the fact that they have 2017 listed and LG does not yet seems like that, it makes you think that these are all set in stone. Like, what's going to happen in the foreseeable future? Like, maybe. But I think what people have been saying is like, LG isn't known for like adding new software to like last year's TVs, that they don't do that. So I'm not optimistic. But I'm also like, I'm thinking about like what's being promised here. My hope is that the Apple TV gets some of the stuff that's missing and part of this announcement in a software update, like in a tvOS update or something. Because really, like the ability to AirPlay from an iPhone or an iPad or a Mac to the TV, like I don't do that much now anyway. I just like, I with the Apple TV, I use the apps that are built in. And the idea of using Siri can do that from the Siri remote. It would be neat to be able to do more from the HomePod to initiate playback, but I hope that's coming anyway. Like if the Apple TV, you know, gets some of these features, then you would be able to do that. And it's like the Fire TV is more like closest to that, where you can say like navigate right, play this, you know, do it all with voice.
Yeah.
Apple TV is behind in that regard, and I hope that they're catching up this year. I mean, they weren't too busy last year with features, so. Yeah, so I don't think I'll be replacing my TV. I certainly will not be replacing my TV for one of these, even though I think these are really cool and I'm a big HomeKit enthusiast, and anything like that that explains what HomeKit can do, I'm excited about. I just hope that Apple TV is first class citizen. Like it would be too bad to have some features built into TVs, because even then, like you can't buy the Apple version of a TV set. So then like you couldn't buy one thing that does it all.
You know, yeah,
you'd have some features that are better on the set-top box, like the app experience and what's offered there, and then other things would be just like part of the TV. So yeah, I'm excited by this, but I'm not gonna buy into TV because of this.
As long as Apple isn't thinking about like canceling the Apple TV set-top box entirely,
yeah,
which I don't think they're gonna do. They might have like major form factor changes or do like a Chromecast-y smaller type thing, but I think TVOS is sticking around for a while yet. Mm-hmm. As long as that's gonna be the case, there it doesn't make any sense for them to limit these features, the automation features, just to the brand new smart TVs. like, it doesn't make sense. So I'd 100% expect them to come to the Apple TV as well. And one thing I just point out is we've been talking now, pay-TV video. All of these TVs will work as part of a multi-room audio setup if you want them to. Video is just one device. You can't stream to two. You can't stream to two televisions at the same time and have it synchronized. It's one to one only. But if you do music around the house, you can add your new, you know, AirPlay 2 enabled TV into it as well, and
Whatever speaker is connected to it, just like with Apple TV in that regard.
Yeah.
You know, if it's your surround sound, or it's a sound bar, or if it's the bad built-in speakers, like it's all part of the multi-room experience, which is, in my experience, pretty good. So,
yeah,
cool stuff. 9to5 Mac Happy Hour is brought to you by LinkedIn Jobs. It's no secret that hiring the right talent for your company is hard. It can feel like a full-time job all on its own, but LinkedIn can take the guesswork out of hiring. That's because LinkedIn is more than the world's largest professional network. It's also a better way to find great talent. The way it works now is you post a job to a jobs board and hope you find the right person for your job. But if you think about it, how often do you check job boards? For most people, it's a pretty occasional thing, but there is a place where people go daily to grow professionally and explore job opportunities. In fact, 70% of the U.S. workforce is already there. It's LinkedIn. You already know LinkedIn as the world's largest professional network. And here's the thing. It's also a better way to find great talent. Just ask any of the hundreds of thousands of businesses who have posted on LinkedIn Jobs over the past year. And because LinkedIn considers skills, experiences, location, and more to match and promote your job to potential candidates, businesses are rating LinkedIn Jobs 40% higher than jobs boards at delivering quality candidates. 22 million professionals view and apply to jobs on LinkedIn every week in every industry, even yours and mine. If you're not using LinkedIn for your hiring needs, there's no better time to start than now. Just go to linkedin.com/happyhour and get a $50 credit toward your first job post. That's linkedin.com/happyhour for your $50 credit today. Terms and conditions apply. Our thanks to LinkedIn Jobs for sponsoring 9 to 5 Mac Happy Hour. All right, and the other aspect of all of this is that Samsung...
Yeah, just to complicate the offerings a bit more.
Yeah, I mean, just to emphasize that you can't buy one thing with everything yet, is that the Samsung smart TVs will have, like you said, AirPlay 2, but not HomeKit. So you can't do the Siri stuff. It's just like directly from the phone to the TV. But it will also have the iTunes Movie and TV Shows app, which is the only one to have that. It does not get HomeKit, but it gets the iTunes Movies and TV Shows app, which is totally a first. Like, at no point in the past have you been able to do iTunes Movies and TV Shows on anything but an Apple device, or you know, Windows, but not a set-top box or a TV directly. And so this is like brand new space for Apple. And, you know, like I buy a lot of movies through iTunes. I've got 150 movies or so through iTunes. It's not, like, I don't like to spend money like on junk. So like a few big purchases, but like movies are something that's like in that $15, you know, area. And it's like, that's something that I don't like to spend like $10, $5 and rent a movie. If I'm probably going to like it, then I just want to buy it. Like, even if it's the first time I'm going to view it. So I like to buy movies on iTunes, and not having like a media library of like physical media to deal with and like converting it to digital and all that stuff. So I'm a big fan of like iTunes, for movies. And so this is interesting to me. Again, not going to replace my TV for this, but I could totally see this coming to more TVs that have a platform, like, that whereas like the HomeKit stuff and AirPlay 2 would be limited to, you know, 2017 to 2019 TVs, depending on who makes it. The app, if Apple's doing this, it seems to me that they would want to put it as many places as possible. Like, is this app going to be just part of like 2019 Samsung TVs, or is it going to be part of like Samsung's smart TV platform? Do we have an answer for that yet?
Yeah, I don't think they specified. I think they guaranteed that it was on all the TVs that are getting AirPlay 2.
Yeah,
but they didn't go beyond that.
Yeah, so because of this, is just like all like a preview. It isn't like a go out and buy it yet. It's a lot of
There are no screenshots of the app,
right? Just the
icon. There's a placeholder icon, and that's it.
Yeah, and whereas we do see the UI of like iOS with like the new TV set icon within Control Center and the audio video picker and within the Home app even as like an HDMI input.
Yeah, and The Verge's Nilay Patel got a demo of the Hello Siri play Game of Thrones on the TV with Vizio and saw that actually work.
Yeah.
And then when they went to the Samsung booth, they could do the AirPlay 2 demo, but they weren't allowed to do anything with the iTunes Movie TV Shows apart from look at the app icon.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure this deal was agreed and the app doesn't exist yet.
Like, yeah.
Someone's ramping up a development team now to actually make it happen.
Yeah. This is one where I really hope that it's like, it's just an exclusive period and then it comes to other TVs. Like, because from what people have been saying, it doesn't seem like it's hard to make the app like that is very similar on each platform. So
yeah, it's like Electron on the Mac, right? Yeah. It's a web app in a wrapper because the Samsung TVs are technically Tizen OS, which is Samsung's own operating system. Yeah. But there's no way that this app will be like a native Tizen app. It'll just be HTML5 and JavaScript in a nice little wrapper, and then ship that. And then maybe it will come to other places. I'm convinced it will come to other places eventually.
Yeah, like we know what a good iOS and a good Mac app is, but are there good Tizen apps? I don't know that there are. I will just hope that this comes to webOS and LG TVs and then all the other platforms, because part of this is the big looming video service that's coming this year, where you pay Apple monthly for access to their original content. And, you know, they're going to want that to be in more places. and having it only be on like 2019 TVs and then natively on Samsung TVs or Apple TV, then that's almost doing nothing.
Like, yeah, it's a drop in the ocean.
Yeah, it's like you almost did the right thing there, but then you left out like the majority of everybody else in this.
Yeah, you need to take this app that's currently called iTunes, but won't be when they rebrand it under the new Pizzazz. And that will have to come to, like, other... I think it's going to have to come to other competitors to the Apple TV.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
Roku set-top
boxes, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, not just, oh, we've got to buy a new TV or maybe last year's TV. I think they've got to put it on, like, Roku, Google TV boxes.
All
like,
the gaming consoles.
Yeah. Maybe even cable boxes, because like I don't know what the situation is in America, but in Britain, but like on my Virgin cable box, I can access Netflix through the cable box. I don't have to have a separate thing to do that. So they can't you can't just be like buy an Apple TV or have a Samsung TV.
Like anywhere there's a Plex app, there should be an Apple TV app too.
Yeah, exactly. Like it really has. Like if that's where they're going to take this, then. They didn't have any other choice. Yeah. Like, and I think the reason that the AirPlay 2 isn't all the manufacturers, but the app is currently only promised to Samsung, is that the manufacturers are making the integration for AirPlay 2 in kind of like an MFI program, right?
Sure.
Where Apple signs it off, but Apple's not the one engineering the AirPlay 2 protocol into all these TVs. That'll be up to the manufacturers. But whereas the app is going to be made by Apple, Apple has limited resources, so they're only targeting one platform to start with. And they'll be building it on the foundation that's easily portable to other platforms, but limited resource Apple doesn't want to overpromise. So that's why it's only coming to Samsung first. Because there is nothing in my head that would explain them not wanting to put it on an LG TV or a Vizio TV. Like, there's just no reason they wouldn't.
Yeah. I haven't looked at numbers, but it must be that Samsung sells more TVs than LG or Sony.
Samsung would be number one, for sure.
I know they have like all across the spectrum in terms of price, but that must be why they're targeting Samsung, because it's such a weird partnership otherwise. Like, you know, if you just look at like phones, for example. So yeah, that's interesting. This had me thinking, like, This changes like how all of this work, like how Apple content on TV sets work. Now that it can be AirPlayed, which the AirPlay stuff, it only appeals to me because of the voice control stuff. But as far as like video being initiated by a satellite device, like that doesn't really appeal to me. That feels a little bit like a step backwards from the device with the screen on it, like something always being present.
Well, it's not an answer to the how do you get people to use our new TV subscription service.
Sure.
It's just a convenience for binding you to the Apple ecosystem more and more, like offering you, oh, your friends come over, they want to show you something, oh, let's put, you know, let's just beam it to the TV, no nonsense, you just press one button. Like, that's where I see the main benefits of that, and that's why I've been wanting them to do it, you know, 8 years ago when they started it on Apple TV alone, but they're late, and so it's going to be a slow rollout, and eventually they'll get there, but it'll be years. That is not an answer to the TV thing. The Samsung app will be, because the iTunes app will change, but that's only an answer for the Samsung TVs that it's launching on. It's not an answer for the global ecosystem, because they haven't announced anything else. And of course it will come to Apple TV, but if they want this to be a hit the ground running, I like Samsung TVs plus Apple TV is not enough, in my opinion. Like, they need to go wider.
And it did have me thinking, like, in my head, like, you know, I'm not in the market for a new TV now, but like if I you know, am in 5 years from now, like, will I want to have the Apple TV in the mix, or will it be enough? Like, will it possibly be better in some regards to just have a TV that has iTunes content, you know, iTunes movies and TV shows and like one of the services, and then all the other apps on that platform, you know, on webOS or whatever Samsung's is or whatever. And then not have to fiddle with an input, like the Apple TV as an add-on. So I know like people in my family that used to be Apple TV users have since upgraded their TVs, and then they have a pretty good app experience from the TV itself, where they don't see a need to have the Apple TV because they don't have iTunes movies and TV shows. They just do Netflix and they don't see value in any of the apps or the games and AirPlay. So I can see that being okay. for me, I was just really thinking about it, and the benefit would be one specifically is that YouTube would, like, if I watch YouTube on my LG TV, it's 4K. If I watch it on the Apple TV 4K, it's not, because Google and Apple have this 4K video format war, and they've not settled it yet, and there's no end in sight for that unless there's like a new 4K format that's coming and they both agree to use that. We'll see. But this would be the first time, like, if LG got this iTunes Movies and TV Shows app, then I could use, like, not even use the Apple TV and watch iTunes Movies and TV Shows on LG's platform, and then switch over to YouTube and watch 4K YouTube videos. And then there are some apps like YouTube Kids is on LG's platform, but it's not on Apple TV as an app. It's on iOS as an app, but not on the TV, not on Apple TV. And there's some more examples of that. But then there are also, like, it's way more rare for me, but there are a few things that the Apple TV, like, TVOS platform can do that I like too. Like, I do like to play podcasts from the TV sometimes, like, as like the source. So I'm not airplaying it from the iPhone. The iPhone can be wherever, and it's like loud enough to play around the house, and just the TV doing it. I kind of like that convenience. Also, there's an app, Yoga Studio, that I like to use on the Apple TV. I've been using about 4 or 5 times now, that I'm enjoying, and that's on iOS. So I guess you could airplay that. I don't know, but that wouldn't be part of the TV built-in experience. So I think long term, I just really hope that, like, Apple TV gets better, because I really don't mind upgrading the set-top box and having the same dumb TV, you know, for years. That's you know, partly why Apple has not made a TV set, is because people don't upgrade the TVs that often. And you know, but we've also seen Apple not upgrade the Apple TV box that often either. You know, it's like a 2-year cycle, if anything.
And especially the software, even slower iterations.
Yeah, so I think that, I mean, I think the best case scenario probably would be that Apple, like, makes a TV, because eventually this stuff calms down with, like, how many changes there are. It would be the best TV of all of these. And it would have, like, deep iOS control integration and all that too, whereas, like, these don't. But unless that happens, like, there are enough benefits of an Apple TV set-top box that I want that to be the best experience. Like, you're not going to get control center navigation on anything but the Apple TV right now. Like, all these things are nice, but they're the only thing that's better so far is the potential for automation and scenes with HomeKit and the voice control stuff. And, like, again, just can't say enough, I hope that comes to Apple TV too.
If I could snap my fingers and the TVs that we have in the shared areas today magically added an iTunes Movie TV Shows app and added AirPlay 2 beaming, I wouldn't unplug the Apple TVs that are connected to them now. Mm-hmm. Because I like tvOS. I like how fluid the UI is. I like the trackpad scrolling around. I don't like the overall design of the remote, but the trackpad movement is fantastic and way better than anything else I've used. And I know that's a controversial opinion, because people love to hate on tvOS, but I like it and it's better. And we use the Photos app to show the family photos on the TV constantly. We have Apple Music play on there sometimes using the actual music app, so you get the nice UI with the For You and the browse and everything, and you can pick it with the Siri remote in the visual UI. And we use Plex a lot, and the Plex client for Apple TV is like the best Plex client you can get for a TV,
because it's made to be like an Apple TV app.
Yeah, it's really well made. Yeah. Really well made. And because of those reasons, I would never unplug them. But, you know, that's a very niche appeal. Like, as a mainstream customer, the need for Apple TV definitely shrinks by these announcements. Like, you can't say it doesn't. And I think it just highlights that the Apple TV proposition needs to have a radical change. And I am happy that Apple is not trying to, like, artificially make it interesting by limiting features, right? Like, we could have put the AirPlay 2 into other people's TVs, but we want people to have Apple TV, so we're not going to do it. Like, that's rubbish. By putting it into the TV, you increase the ecosystem benefits for all your other products, in the same way that DLNA has been kind of doing it badly for Android for 5 years, but you can do it well because you're Apple and you control it. And then you have to be able to sell the Apple TV on different grounds. And if that means making it cheaper, then so be it. Like, if, because at the moment, the game console, you know, angle of Apple TV has not taken off in the way that Apple wanted it to. And the whole, like, because the original Apple TV demo, stage demo, included using, like, the guilt app on Apple TV to buy clothes. Like, that, you know, obviously didn't transpire. Yeah. People don't want to do it. So at the moment, when you pay $150 for the 1080p set-top box, not even the 4K one, you're paying for power that you don't use, right? Like, most people are going to be using the iTunes apps, the Netflix app, the Hulu app, and most people aren't going to care about the niceties and detail and intricacies of the TVOS interface. They're just going to use the Hulu Netflix app that's in their TV, and it is today. So I don't know what happens to Apple TV, but it's definitely not going to stay as it is today, where it's just a straight up $150 plus purchase. And then that's it. Maybe they start bundling it with a subscription, maybe. Like, if you buy the Apple TV, we'll give you 12 months of the TV service as well to kind of, like, offset it a bit. Maybe it's like, oh, if you commit to 3 years of TV service, we'll just give you an Apple TV. Maybe they change the Apple TV hardware and make it, like, a much smaller dongle that is more, that still has the TVOS sheen, but it doesn't have to worry about, you know, driving massive 3D games that no one plays on it, for instance. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know what the answer is there, but they have to do something. And especially comparing, like, this announcement to Apple Music on Alexa or an Echo speakers. For me, the Apple TV is way more marginalized than the HomePod is on those same differences. Because the HomePod still has unique advantages. And yes, it is slightly expensive, but it has, you know, it's the Siri option. The home Siri smart speaker option for Apple customers, and it's a really nice speaker. The Apple TV has much, much smaller benefits compared to what you could get built in, or compared to what you get by buying a Roku or a Chromecast or anything like that. So,
and for $180 or $200 for the 4K version,
yeah, it's just mental. So something is going to change there, hopefully sooner rather than later. Because it can't stay as it is today, because the status quo is bad. And I'm very happy in a kind of like mortal way that the 10% of Apple TV sales that were being bought by schools and enterprises just to play AirPlay on, that market will now slowly shrink away, meaning that they have to put even more attention into making the mainstream appeal of Apple TV better, because they can't just rely on this kind of baseline of, oh, these people are going to have to buy it because we don't provide any other options for this.
Yeah, now that AirPlay 2 video is an option, is something that exists, that once it comes to more TVs and maybe projectors, like, then you could buy something. You know, right now, I think Apple TV is still the cheapest solution, like, add it to an existing TV, you know, for $150 or whatever. But once this AirPlay 2 stuff comes to TVs that don't cost $1,500, then that will be pressure for Apple TV.
Yeah, if next year the TV prices have dropped to $1,000 and I'm a big company that has, you know, decent budgets, I'm not going to want to buy an Apple TV for this room, this office. I'll just put the Samsung TV in there and just let people AirPlay to it and be done with it. Like,
yeah, well, I don't know why. Well, I mean, like, I think the price is made up by the screen and not the Wi-Fi parts of it, because, like, you can buy even 4K LCD TVs with decent screen size for under $500. Like, I was really surprised walking around Best Buy at how, like, what you could get a 4TV LCD for. How big it could be, that it could still have Wi-Fi and have apps built in. But and then it's 4K, you know, and under like $500. Like, I was pretty surprised by that. So I think there's no reason that, like, if like, only thing I could think is, like, if there's just some internals that are used on the TVs that are, you know, higher end screens, because you can, like, even if you just say 4K LCD, doesn't tell you, like, how good it is. There are lots of other variables of, like, screen quality. And then once you go to OLED, like, it's pricey because it's OLED. But you can have cheaper, like, even 1080p, you can have much cheaper LCDs at big sizes. So I don't see why you couldn't have AirPlay 2 and the apps, that play the videos natively on TVs that cost, you know, $100 and $200. Like, this, like, I could foresee a future that is not that far off where you
take a Chromecast. How much is a Chromecast? $50.
Yeah.
So the cost of components to do this stuff is not ridiculous.
Yeah.
Obviously these manufacturers will want to put this fancy new feature in their expensive TVs to try and make people buy them. Mm-hmm. But over the course of time, it will just become, you know, standard across the line.
Yeah, I could totally see a future where you buy a 40-inch TV that's 1080p and it has it's Wi-Fi enabled and it has apps. It's got, you know, a smart platform built in, and it costs, you know, $150. Like, it costs the same exact price as an Apple TV that isn't even 4K. Like, that's kind of fun to think about. It's like, do you want to buy the TV with AirPlay 2 and the iTunes movie? Like, that doesn't exist yet, but with all this. Now I could see it being a thing in like a year or two, which would
and I'm convinced that the addition of the iTunes app to a non-Apple device, that is not the last announcement from there. There will be plenty more iTunes apps on plenty more platforms.
This week, 9to5 Mac Happy Hour is sponsored by SetApp, the first subscription service for Mac apps. And together, we're giving Happy Hour listeners the chance to win Apple's brand new MacBook Air. SetApp is the first subscription service for Mac apps, offering users access to a suite of over 130 plus apps for just $9.99 per month. A few of the notable apps include Clean My Mac X, the Flume Instagram for Mac app, Archiver, Chatmate for WhatsApp, and the Capto screen recording app, among over 100 others. Since launching almost 2 years ago, SetApp has been consistently adding great apps along with new subscribers to make the platform a success for both its users and developers. Sign up for a free trial of SetApp's collection of over 130 Mac apps using our link in the show notes, and look for the giveaway entry form to sign up for your chance to win a brand new space gray MacBook Air with Touch ID. Our thanks to SetApp for sponsoring 9to5 Mac Happy Hour. All right, Mayo, the rest of CES. So that was exciting. TVs and AirPlay 2 and HomeKit and iTunes on TVs. Exciting stuff. But there was some more like the traditional HomeKit stuff that we kind of came, you know, expected this to happen. Announcements. So the first one, is like all of this HomeKit stuff is not out yet. I want to be super cautious about, and, like, just because it's announced. And no, it doesn't mean that it will ship. Like the hardware will, but the HomeKit part might not, because there's been plenty of examples of like exciting announcements at CES, and when it comes to HomeKit, like it doesn't work, it doesn't happen. Like, but
people promise comes in the summer and it doesn't come till the like December, and
yeah,
HomeKit is just the HomeKit timeline is just full of delays. Like, so everything you have to approach with extreme caution on what people say.
Yeah, like one of the more exciting things from last CES was the First Alert Safe and Sound smoke and carbon monoxide detector, because it had Alexa built in, it had a music quality speaker built in, and it promised to support AirPlay 2. and they sent me one to review, and I've been waiting for AirPlay 2 to arrive before I even install it, because that's like one of the more interesting things about it. Is it's a speaker in your ceiling that you can beam audio to without using Alexa. But it hasn't arrived yet. And like they told me all last year that it would be by the end of the year, and then the end of the year came and then it didn't happen. So and now CES is back again. So that can happen. There's also been HomeKit fans that have been shown off at CES that haven't come. So this can happen. But we have been promised by Netatmo that they will release a HomeKit doorbell camera this year. And that's a thing that doesn't exist yet. Like August used to promise that their doorbell camera would.
The doorbell camera situation is like the epitome of HomeKit missed promises and empty words.
Yeah. August had a blog post with a quote from their CEO that said that their chip worked. They chose that chip because they knew it would work with HomeKit ahead of time, and they did that so that they could add HomeKit support retroactively. And then they deleted the blog post. Like, it's still quoted in my original review of the hardware, the August doorbell camera. But then they made an August doorbell cam pro, and they never even promised HomeKit for that one. They were just like, no. And I would even ask, like, regularly their PR person, who has since left the company, or like left, you know, the group, anywhere on that. And they said no, and please don't mention it in your story because it riles up customers. It's like, yeah, because they want it.
And it was on that Apple official list of HomeKit accessories as coming. Yep. And then it towards the end of last year, they got rid of it, and the whole doorbell category isn't there on that page at all at the moment.
We all just acknowledge that isn't coming, and that there are no other promises. Like Ring, we'll tell you on Twitter that they're going to work with HomeKit in the future. But as typical of these announcements with HomeKit, if it isn't out yet, don't trust it. And so when they were bought by Amazon, people said, oh, surely you're not going to do HomeKit now. And they said, no, even with Amazon owning us, we still plan to do HomeKit. And they'll tell you today, they'll say, we can now announce to you, Twitter person, that the Ring Pro will work with HomeKit. We just can't say when. And it's like, okay, we'll see.
And they've been saying that for what, like 3 years now, probably?
Yeah, I mean, the Amazon purchase was last year, but like they've been saying it for years before that even. So
yeah.
And they say it with a straight face somehow. Canary is another offender here, where there are lots of HomeKit video cameras, but Canary had a blog post that said the Canary Pro will be their first HomeKit camera, and we're all bummed out. We're like, you got to buy a new Canary to get HomeKit, and it never shipped, and they don't talk about it anymore. But there are like six or seven actual like HomeKit cameras you can buy. One is actually two are from Netatmo, so. That's hope, that's gives me optimism that Netatmo will not only ship their new doorbell camera, but that it will work with HomeKit when it ships. Like if it ships and on day one HomeKit isn't there, no idea if it's going to work or not in the future. Like won't hold out. Like wouldn't buy it if it didn't work with HomeKit yet, if you wanted that feature. But it seems like they're not saying like it's going to come out tomorrow. They're saying this year.
Yeah, I think they said the second half of this year.
Yeah, really. Really being careful there. But because Netatmo makes HomeKit video cameras, it makes me think that maybe they knew what's going on here. And the other thing is there was a company out of, I forget where, but it was somewhere in Europe or so. I think the name was Robin Telecom. It was a funny name, but they emailed us a copy of their certification from Apple saying that they've been approved to release HomeKit video support in their doorbell camera. So because they pitched us a story and we're like, we don't even know who you are as a company, like much less support this big claim that you've made. And so like to back it up, they sent us like documentation that they probably shouldn't have shared. But that makes me think that maybe the bottleneck has been Apple and that now something's changed and they are like flipping the switch and giving companies the green light to move forward. So maybe this is the year of the HomeKit doorbell camera after all. We'll see. I don't know. I would definitely not buy something on the in this space on the promise of like a future feature. You know, like this is notorious. The HomeKit space is notorious for promises being made that are not kept, and then there's like, you know, you just lose. There's nothing, nothing there for you. Sorry.
Yep.
Other thing is, we saw a lot of announcements for CarPlay receivers, aftermarket CarPlay receivers that add wireless support. So this is also positive in this space. Like everything announced at CES is for the press to see that's coming this year and for vendors to say, like, I want to carry that in, you know, in my store. So it's a big, you know, preview. Nothing, not a lot of announcements that are like, buy this today. But there were, I think, two from JVC, both were wireless. And then, or maybe that was from Kenwood, and then JVC had, or Kenwood had, like seven that were all wireless. So it's awesome to see that if they're going to make an aftermarket CarPlay receiver and charge, you know, $600 for it, that they think it's reasonable to have all of them be wireless. Like right now, before this, Alpine was the first to make a wireless CarPlay receiver that was aftermarket. And it was one model, but then most of their other models were not wireless. And then Pioneer made a bunch of new ones, but only like one or two were wireless. And with JVC and Kenwood, we're seeing that every CarPlay receiver they make, it will be wireless for CarPlay, which is, I wouldn't want to buy one that wasn't. So I'm excited about this. And, then Sony made a new CarPlay receiver, but it's not wireless. So like the Sony one, it would need to be really good to recommend. Like really cheap to recommend if it's not going to be wireless, because it seems now that you've got options from Alpine, Pioneer, JVC, Kenwood. Like save your money, buy the wireless version. Because like even if you buy a brand new car today, it's really hard to find one with wireless. Like, it's BMW and maybe Mercedes or somebody else. Like, it's not there yet.
Yeah, it's taken its sweet, sweet time.
Yeah, and if you're going to spend, you know, $500 to $1,000 on an aftermarket screen, you can spend more money when not get wireless, or you can spend, you know, around the same and get wireless, and that's not cheap to do. You've also got to worry about the installation. But if you're going to make the investment at all, I would super recommend that you get wireless, because, like,
yeah, you're kind of shooting yourself in your foot if you splash out aftermarket and don't get, you know, the latest specification, which is the wireless versions. Because you can obviously, if you've got the wireless one, you can always still have a lightning cable in your car just to plug in and charge.
Yep. My car has CarPlay built in. It's not aftermarket, and so it's not wireless because it's not a BMW or a Mercedes. And so there's plenty of times where I'm making a really short trip, and I don't bother plugging it up for CarPlay. Like, my phone just stays in my pocket or my bag. And I don't like to use Bluetooth because it's way too aggressive about connecting. Like, and my car, Bluetooth will connect and play without the source being turned on. Like, it'll play, like, through a podcast over Bluetooth when the system isn't playing anything for you. Like, it's not. So I just have Bluetooth, like, not, it isn't connected to my car. So it's wired or it's nothing. But yeah, if
you're Bluetooth sucks.
Yeah, for that, it sucks.
As a 1 minute aside, my mum has a CarPlay car, but like you, very often she can't be able to plug it in because they're only doing a 10 minute drive, but she wants some music in that time. She does have it Bluetooth to her phone. We have family Apple Music. But because her phone's only 64 gig, she has optimized Apple Music on, which means half of her music is stored in the cloud, not local. She doesn't want to use a limited data plan. So we have mobile data turned off for the music, you know, for music, so it can't download it. But what does the Bluetooth client try and do? It tries and plays every single song that isn't on the phone. So it will show the track name on the screen, but then nothing will play for 30 seconds until it finally gives up and goes to another song. So whilst you're going down the road, you end up with minutes long stretches of silence.
In that regard, it's not really Bluetooth's fault. It's like in both of these situations, it's just like the car system is bad.
Yeah, I don't know where the problem is. There's some, I don't know if it's like the iPhone needs to not advertise songs that it doesn't actually have to the Bluetooth protocol, or which way it goes around it goes, but it definitely doesn't work.
It's like, I've used CarPlay since the first week that you could add it to a car you already owned. As soon as Pioneer had the first model out, like, we, for the sake of 9to5Mac, had it installed on my car and, like, so I could review it. And so I've used CarPlay from day one, and people have always asked me, like, is it worth it? Is it great? And it's like, it's not great, but it's good. It's not great though. It's like, there are so many things CarPlay could do better. Like, it took a while for them to be able to, like, to play audio messages into you from iMessage. To play the audio, and you can't send one back. You can only dictate back with speech to text. It's like, that's such a small thing, but like, it's so natural in the car to be driving and say, send Benjamin a message, but say, send Benjamin an audio message and then record the clip. And then it's like, you don't have to worry about it. Did it dictate the right way? Because often it does not in the car. There's a lot of things like that. And so I'm always like reluctant to like say, yeah, go spend $1,000 and have this added to your car. Because CarPlay itself is like, it's like, okay. But the systems that it compares to, it's like leagues ahead of the built-in stuff. So if you despise what's already built into your car, like if you can't stand it, then CarPlay is a lifesaver. If you can deal with it, then, you know, it's a tough call. We also saw in the HomeKit space, this is something that I feel like last year was part of all the announcements too, and like some of these haven't shipped yet, but there's a shower controller from a company called U by Moen. So the letter U. What's that?
I said catchy.
Oh, yeah, yeah. U, the letter U, and then by, as in like, this is by me, and then the company Moen. That's weird branding, but they seem to be the only ones promising to make a shower controller. And they announced this thing last year, and I think it works with Alexa. But they could demo this year HomeKit working, and they say that's coming by the end of the quarter, I believe. So I don't know a whole lot about this space of like smart shower controllers, but the idea is that you, we have video of this working of like, I think you could talk to Siri to like start and stop the water, and you can like set the temperature range too and change like how the water shoots out. So I'm really interested in that.
I guess the proposition here is you like start the shower while you're downstairs or something. Cause Like, if you're in the shower, you just press the buttons on the shower.
Yeah. I could see it being, like, part of a routine where you say good morning and things happen. And part of that is the shower comes on and heats up. Because that's like a, I know for me, there's like a few minutes of like the water needs to warm up and everything. A lot of this stuff is like, it's on the bubble, like whether it's worth it or not. But as a thing that exists, I think it's neat. And
And it has a cool interface in the home, yeah, in the home app where you get like the two separate sliders and stuff.
Yeah, it reminds me of sprinkler controllers, how you can control that where the, and also kind of the blinds. So it's like you have a capsule that you move up and down for like brightness of the lights, and then for blinds, just like up and down, it's like open and shutting shades. And for this, there's like temperature, and then like I guess on and off too. So it's neat. Like it's of all the things that HomeKit supports, you know, like that Apple builds UI for. This is neat to see. So there's another one is a sink, which I'm not sure that they were demoing as much, and that's way more on the bubble of like is it worth it? But again, like if you want like a smart home and like every aspect is intelligent, then it's cool to exist. We also saw the announcement of Lutron. Lutron has a bridge that you can put on your network that makes their Lutron light switches and plugs work with HomeKit and the Home app, and so that covers lights and lamps. And something new this year is a fan speed controller. And what that does is it replaces the on-off wall switch for a ceiling fan. If you have a switch on the wall that's dedicated to the fan, you remove that and you put this there. And then, you know, so it works on the wall. You turn the fan on and off, and you can go through different speeds. So I think there's 25%, 50%, 75%, and 100% speeds when the fan's on. And it's all in the wiring of like how it replaces the wall switch. And then in software, you can control it from the iPhone app, or with voice using Amazon Alexa or with Google Assistant. And I saw a lot of coverage of this saying HomeKit 2, like everywhere that I read about it. And the first place I saw the hardware was in one of the FCC document leaks. And so that was like, just this is the hardware. There's nothing marketing about it. And so for me, it was like one of like possibly the most exciting thing in HomeKit to be announced, because as of today, you can buy a HomeKit ceiling fan that does a lot of things. You can change the direction of which way it goes based on the season. And if you want air to go up or down, you can change the speed and you can turn it on and off, and it can be part of automations and scenes. And so being able to do that to a dumb ceiling fan would be really cool. And so before I covered the story, I contacted Lutron's press people, and I said, like, very specifically, will you be able to put it in the Home app if you have this HomeKit, you know, compatible bridge? And if so, will it show up as a fan or like a plug or a light or like whatever? Because right now you can put a switch on a fan and then it thinks it's a light and doesn't.
Yeah, so it could have just been simple on off, or it could have actually been speed control.
Yeah, I want to detail it. Like, I gave them screenshots of like the UI of like what the Hunter HomeKit fan looks like. Like, will it do this basically? And the person gave me a very reasonable, let me find out and get back to you, because obviously like they weren't the expert. And they talked to the expert and they said, no, it will only work with Alexa and Google Assistant. So then I decided, okay, now I know enough to cover this story of like, here's a really cool thing coming. Lutron makes HomeKit lights. This won't work with HomeKit when it launches. And so that was the story. I don't ever read like the comments on my stories, because I can be overly sensitive and like take it personally of like strangers in the internet. But this week I do read every like tweet to me, and there were a lot of people that were just like, you're wrong, guy. Like, go look at this other blog. They say it's HomeKit. You're wrong. Like, check your facts on this. And I also, you know, I've been way more into reading Reddit as like the comments on our stories. I feel like the system there is more useful for like healthy dialogue. And even on Reddit, it was like in the HomeKit subreddit where people know their stuff, were like, and this guy's wrong. And so I felt the need to respond, and I probably should have just ignored it, but I shared with redactions, like the email exchange, people could see what I asked and like what the answer was. And then people were trying to see like, oh, okay, thanks for clarifying, like we believe you. And then this morning, like it was around midnight, Lutron contacted to say, I guess they didn't like care for the no HomeKit aspect of it. And so they they offered up new information, which was, we do plan to work with HomeKit in the future, you know, and they gave me a new addition to the statement. And so I added that to the story. But this is the thing.
And that is the perfect, like, CES HomeKit vaporware comment.
Yeah, because it's like,
we plan to add HomeKit in the future.
It's like, all you have to do to say that is just say it, and you don't have to do it. And it's a lot of work in the situations to do it. And it's like, I don't think this exists as a thing yet where you can add on an accessory to make an existing fan work in HomeKit. Like, it seems like there's more work that might actually be on Apple's part. So, like, it could be iOS 13. It could be iOS 14. Like, I don't think what I wanted to clarify was, like, you can't just buy this accessory and, like, have it show up in the home app as a fan, like, even if you had the bridge. And that's not going to be the case. Like, I thought it might work, but I asked, they answered no. And then based on, like, the triple checking, I do not expect that to happen. And it may be that there needs to be, like, some intentional, like, work around this for Apple to support it before it can be a thing.
Yeah, extensions to the HomeKit protocol, new UI in the Home app to show it and make it work.
Yep.
And that means a long lead time.
Yeah. In the meantime, though, like, I think this thing costs, like, $80 a piece versus $300 for a new ceiling fan. And where I live in the South, like, ceiling fans are very valuable, just like air conditioned. And so... I'm very excited for this to exist, like, even as a thing that only works, like, with an iPhone app or with Alexa or Google Assistant. And I don't love Alexa's smart home stuff, but I will totally, like, test and review this thing when it comes out and probably, like, buy one for each fan. Because I already use Lutron as the wall switch for the light so that you don't have an issue with, like, turning it on and off and it being powered. And it's like, people can figure out how to use it without actually turning it off, like Hue lights. I like Lutron light switches a lot. And for the fan stuff, like, you know, this is a new solution. But I think I'll probably, I can definitely see, like, using Alexa for fan control and, like, you know, maybe not even doing anything in the app, just saying, like, you know, turn the fan on, turn the fan off, change the speed. And then the Alexa smart home stuff has gotten pretty good for automation and scenes, where you can actually tie in Apple Music and lots of other tasks, like having your Echo give you a report on your calendar. And you know, it's pretty impressive. So this is part of my story. Is like, Alexa stuff is not bad. Like Alexa compatibility is a good thing, even though it's not going to be HomeKit yet. Like, it's still a new thing to exist that I'm glad it does. So we'll see how that goes. But that was kind of like the mini drama of CES was, like, asking a question, getting an answer, and, like, people being like, you're wrong. Okay. It's like, you know, and I'm glad that there was, like, even more commentary of, like, you know, no, it won't be HomeKit at launch, but, like, we are going to have that on the roadmap. And there, especially on Reddit, like, there were some thoughtful people who had long responses that laid out, like, usually what Lutron does is work a long time on a product and not have a roadmap for it, because they do everything for, like, up front, and then they release it and it's done, and they don't have a big history of, like, going back and, like, adding new features or something. And in this case, it sounds like to promise HomeKit is the kind of out of their play. Like, it is not their usual play.
Exceptional, not the norm.
Yeah. And maybe it's just that the pressure of the story, like, got that. I mean, they would not have commented on the record, I think, without the story, that they will do HomeKit in the future. Like, nowhere on the website or, like, in the press release was it there. And, yeah, so maybe it made a difference and it will work with HomeKit by the end of the year or early next year. They didn't say that, you know, when. They just said, you know, in the future. So, we'll see. But all in all, I think it was, I mean, for a CES, it's a pretty news-packed year. I mean, the AirPlay 2 stuff was, like, literally on Apple's website. It's like a new addition to the AirPlay page. So, like, that was an Apple announcement, even if they
weren't. Yeah, if Apple had an event, that would almost be like a 15-minute segment where they demoed it and announced the partnerships and then showed off, like, the iTunes app and stuff. Like, that was a big deal. And obviously, they're not waiting. They could have not said anything to the spring and then done it. So the
TVs are ready. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cause it isn't like you can buy anything. Well, I guess, like, some of the older ones you can probably go out and buy.
I'll just say I would not buy any new TV without seeing what the new Apple TV subscription service looks like, because there's a chance that tvOS will give you the best experience, and even like the iTunes, the app that's on the Samsung TVs might not be one-to-one feature-wise. There may be some really cool feature that requires like 3D modeling, or, you know, just let your mind go crazy, that they can only offer on the hardware of the Apple TV and not anything else. So yeah. I will not rush out and pre-order any of these Samsung TVs or anything else until this is more fleshed out and we kind of know the landscape.
Well, for those features. Now, if you're in the market for a new TV, probably wait and see how it all goes. But I will say, like, I've had LCD, I've had plasma, and then I've had, you know, so-called LED TVs, which are like LCD with like better contrast. But buying an OLED TV, like, it's like, just like on the iPhones, like, but even better because it's for video all the time. It's like a 4K OLED TV, like, I don't know the differences between like models and brands, but like, I'm not sure that you can get a bad one. Anytime I go to family, like, I don't know anyone in my family with an OLED TV because they're really expensive still, but I often go to people in my family's homes who have, you know, flat screen TVs, and I come home and it's just like, that TV looks so good. it's a purchase. Like I said, I mean, they're not going to replace it because I like it that much, and these things don't change that. I think OLED is worth upgrading over, and like this other stuff is like neat, but hopefully the Apple TV picks everything up and more. You know, it extends the life of a TV without needing to update the hardware itself. So, yeah, good stuff. All right, that's the Happy Hour podcast for this week. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Apollo Zach Benjamin. You are?
BZA Mayo.
And you can email us at happyhour@9to5mac.com. And we will be back next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye.